Hi everyone, happy Mother's Day. We thought that we would do a different kind of teaching session today. We normally would have one of the elders of the church normally bringing some teaching for everybody, usually from the platform of the New England site. Today, because of the occasion, we thought, how about if we bring it home? So actually, the genuine sofa that is in our house, a real sofa.
The Richard and Judy sofa.
Richard and Judy sofa. So we thought we would do the Richard and Judy, or daytime TV Mother's Day presentation. It's probably more like Punch and Judy, isn't it, in our case. But I'm going to try and bring a little bit of teaching, and you're going to bring some teaching, and we're going to try and share this, and it'll be a bit chatty, and we'll probably kind of work it out as we go along. So is that a good idea?
Yeah, let's do it.
Fantastic. Well, bear with us because we don't do this often and like sit down and talk. No, we do. We do that often, but we don't. This is the first time we've done teaching this way. So, first time, give us some grace. We want to especially encourage and honor and bless in any way that we can mums today, and we want to be as helpful as we can. We want to be inspiring and encouraging to you. As much as we possibly can. And I think that one of the ways that we can do that is by, I would like to reevaluate with you the importance of mums, the importance of motherhood in general. It's not especially recognized, I would say, in our society, in our culture, as a noble calling and a special thing and something to be praised and looked up to, and something to give time and life and energy to, in a devoted, passionate, lifelong, disciplined kind of way. I suppose that the fact that so many mums might be tempted to answer the question, what do you do? And might be try and avoid giving the answer of, oh, I'm just a mum. Think of a few other ways of answering that question. Is an example of that. Would you say that's how it feels from your point of view sometimes?
Yeah, I think so often when you, especially with new introductions, you often talk about your identity and what you do. And I think when you're a mum, it's exactly that. I found myself saying, "I'm just a mum," and deep down inside, I kind of want to say about my qualifications or what I've done as my previous job because I can almost be a bit embarrassed that that is my main role at the moment, and I think you feel like you can be judged for that and seen as kind of like that you can't really do anything else or you've got a low capacity or thing. So I think you can be robbed of the privilege of being available and being a mum.
But it's such a strange way for that, it's a strange thing to admit, isn't it? That it's such a massive and important calling. And I guess I would love us to try and encourage it would be so good if in the church there was increasingly a high view, not just so that we can honour and help mums to feel respected and affirmed, but also I guess so there's a sense of the adventure of it and the sense of wanting to see it as a treasured calling, a noble calling, and something to enjoy the adventure of it, to enjoy the ride and the excitement and see it as a challenge in the same way that people might want to see a certain dynamic job or a responsibility in a firm or even in the public sector in government. Wow, I get to do this and I get to what an adventure, what an adrenaline rush it is to work in this place. That's not typically the way people would see being a mum, but you'd say, wouldn't you, that doesn't have to be the case.
Yeah, I think when you have children in whatever shape or form you have them or look after them, I think it's a calling that God gives you the tools to therefore look after them, to care for them. And I think for me, I kind of think some of the skills that God gave me in previous jobs and even previous ministries I've served at, I think I want to use all of those skills in how I treat the kids, love the kids, care for the kids. So things like working as a team, things like giving them vision, explaining things clearly so that they've got a chance to be involved, yeah, praying for them. I think all those things, I think, are a part of making that more fun, more of an adventure. And I think the more and more you realise that the calling of that and the excitement of that, I think you begin to enjoy it more. Because I think the times when you think, oh, there can be inconvenient because I'm missing out on something, you get robbed of the pleasure of having their company and their fun and nurturing them and challenging them. And they get robbed because often, I'm sure we all do it, you can end up being a bit grumpy towards them. And so I think once your heart attitude has changed, then it follows through and you see the fruit of that.
So true. A quotation that I've used before, but I'm going to use it again because it's so well put. This is somebody called Dorothy Patterson who says, motherhood, if pursued with energy, imagination and skill, has as much challenge and opportunity, success and failure, growth and expansion, perks and incentives as any corporation. Plus, something no other position offers, working for people you love most and want to please the most. So that's a great way of summarizing the rewarding nature of it, the value of it. And I think Mother's Day, brilliant opportunity to kind of redress the balance,
yeah.
Affirm mums and set mums up in the family of the church as people that we affirm and encourage and want to learn from all the time. And honour, especially if it's your mum. Learning to honour your parents is a major part of serving God.
Yeah.
Can I just bring a few things out from a verse or a few verses from scripture. This is actually a passage from the Bible that has been on my mind a lot recently, and it's something that we've been looking at several times over recent weeks. In fact, it came up last week in the gift day that we did. It's from Isaiah 54. I'm going to read some verses out again and use them as a launch pad to just say some more things in the context of Mother's Day. These are the words of Isaiah chapter 54. Sing, O barren one who did not bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud, you who have not been in labor. For the children of the desolate one will be more than the children of her who is married, says the Lord. Enlarge the place of your tent and let the curtains of your habitations be stretched out. Do not hold back. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your stakes. For you will spread abroad to the right and to the left, and your offspring will possess the nations and will people the desolate cities. Fear not, for you will not be ashamed. Be not confounded, for you will not be disgraced. For you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood you will remember no more. For your Maker is your husband. The Lord of hosts is his name. And the Holy One of Israel is your Redeemer. The God of the whole earth he is called. For the Lord has called you like a wife deserted and grieved in spirit, like a wife of youth when she is cast off, says your God. For a brief moment I deserted you, but with great compassion I will gather you. In overflowing anger for a moment I hid my face from you, but with everlasting love I will have compassion on you, says the Lord your Redeemer. I just noticed a few things from that. I mean, we've been living in these verses as a church quite a lot recently, and it's something that's been on my mind, and there's so much that can be said, but just two or three things that seem relevant to today. One of them is actually the whole theme of hope, and hope for the church, hope for the people of God, hope for God's family, when it comes to the way we see the future, the way we see how the church will be treated in the future, how the church will fare, how God's people are going to get on in the world in years and years to come. This part of the Bible is kind of filled with hope, and it just reminds us of God's commitment to his people, his love for his people, his special kind of jealous compassion for his people, like a doting husband, or who's looking at his bride, thinking, I so love you, I cherish you, I want to look after you and care for you and keep you safe and help you to flourish and do anything I can to see you fly and see you achieve everything that I know that you long to achieve. It's such an encouraging passage. And if we see this as a good indicator, as to how God sees the church, that's really encouraging in itself. It means that the church can be hopeful, the church can be expectant of God's blessing. The church has God for her husband, which means that life is likely to come forth. He's a good husband. He can bring life. He can bring protection and blessing. And I say that knowing that, you know, in the world at the moment, there are parts of the world where the church is under terrible threat. I mean, literally, some parts of the world, and we're seeing it in our newspapers, in our headlines, in all kinds of shocking stories recently from some of the Muslim majority world and even other parts of the world where Christians live under terrible threat of violence, imprisonment, or even death. Christianity is officially not allowed to be propagated, and you're not allowed to convert to Christianity. And in some places, it can be easy to imagine, well, how on earth is a church going to do anything good? How are we going to flourish? How are we going to succeed? And then you think of more mild versions of perhaps the same sort of thing, where in Western countries like ours, where it's a little safer, there's a lot more tolerance, it's a lot easier to be a Christian. Nevertheless, we can feel kind of marginalized. The church can feel weak. The church can feel distrusted in a sense of, you know, what voice do we have? What part do we have to play? It's easy to be honest, let your hopes begin to fade and let your head go low. But promises like this from the Bible restore our sense of hope. And actually, some of the sheer statistics globally will restore our hope. God's church is actually growing globally. It's only in some countries, including England, where the church isn't growing fast. It's actually not the story all over the world. In some parts of the world, the church is growing way faster than the birth rate. And so you can literally sort of see it coming true, this idea of, you know, many children, much growth, much excitement and encouragement. But I guess how this relates potentially to Mother's Day is this feeling that we might have as parents, and I know I speak to hundreds of parents across all the four sites of the church, of what's going to happen to my children. I want them to follow Jesus. You know, that's how we want them to grow up. We want them to know God like we do. And we do, we care about their relationship with God. We want them to follow our ways. You know, the Bible encourages, it tells us as parents to teach our children in the ways of God, to instruct them in the ways of God so that they'll grow up with that kind of a pattern of life set out for them. But by doing that, by encouraging our children to follow Jesus, we are encouraging them to a life of some difficulty and challenge. And even marginalization. We're saying, follow us as we follow Jesus, and it's going to get harder to follow Jesus. In some parts of the world, it's going to get harder and harder. In fact, you know, you can sometimes even think, how hard could it be to follow Jesus in England in 10, 20, 30 years' time? I think about that when I think about my kids sometimes. And I'm sure you do as well if you're a parent who's a Christian. And I guess the temptation we might feel is to get pessimistic and discouraged or fearful. And again, when I read these scriptures, I read God saying, fear not, don't be afraid, for you will not be ashamed. Be not confounded, for you will not be disgraced, for you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood. You'll remember no more. God speaking to his people saying, don't live in fear. Don't live in shame. Be encouraged. Be optimistic in a spiritual sense. Have a high view of God's commitment to his people and his willingness to be everything that they need, to provide for them, to look after them. I just want to encourage parents to have a lot of hope for your kids and for their walk with God and for their ability to bring blessing to the world. I'm kind of saying a lot and I've got more to say, but I bet you'd have some relevant comments on that whole thing of the eternal significance of raising kids and having hope for them. What would you say on that sort of thing?
I think when you are in pressure points, specifically with children, it can be so easy to just think of the now. So I know for me, I can be embarrassed sometimes with my kids. I can be out and about. And
embarrassed of your husband sometimes.
Embarrassed of my husband.
Yeah. Not most of the time. You said sometimes.
Sometimes.
Most of the time. Very rarely not.
Then
I have moments.
But what I'm thinking of is sometimes I can be thinking about what other people are thinking, and then how I can parent can often be the short-term thinking, I would actually like my children to be quiet in this context, or I'd like them not to say anything too embarrassing, or not to question me in public, and my heart can be because of the right now, I don't want to look silly, the right now, I don't want to look out of control, I don't want to look like I'm doing a bad job, and then where other times when I have the perspective of eternity and thinking, actually I want to train my children's heart, I can be thinking the bigger picture, what has their day been like, what battles are they facing, what do I want to discuss with them, why I shouldn't be embarrassed at some things, but obviously I still take it very seriously about training my children, but I just want to be knowing why am I training them,
right.
What am I addressing, even thinking of their characters, I think of certain things in my children's character, I think, why has God made this child like that? Rather than just getting irritated by the more fidgety one or irritated by the other one that pushes boundaries a lot, be thinking, what is God going to be doing in their life, and getting excited for the specific gifts he's put in them and the fact that I've been chosen to raise this child, and it's thinking of eternity. And it's training their heart in it, a lot of it, rather than just training what you see, the behaviour, and addressing that, thinking, what is the heart behind what they're doing? Are they just genuinely being a child, having fun, or is there an attention-seeking bit that we could address? And are they looking to God for their affirmation, or are they looking for it to the left and the right? Mm. Things that so I would talk like I would to an adult, to a friend that I love. I would do the same to the children, really. How do they handle disappointment? How do they handle maybe even confrontation, things that we model? How do we handle it? How do we reconcile with each other? How do we say sorry? All those things, I think we want to model it. And we want to get it right.
So seeing it as a training responsibility is vital, and actually that's how the Bible describes parenting in several places. You know, train a child in the right way. If training is rigorous for a football player, for a netball player,
I like the way you dropped in the netball there.
Yeah, thanks. Just to balance the scales there, make sure it's not just about football. I've learned that's very important. But the way that you take on a program of training, if you want to be serious about just a sport or a hobby, just an amateur hobby, you want to improve your golf swing if you need to be good at golf, for example. Well, not that I know anything about that, but you take time, you're vigorous about it, you take correction, you receive correction, and you talk it through, and that's just for a hobby.
Yeah.
And we're talking about God's kingdom, we're talking about eternal matters. And so taking it on as, right, this is a training responsibility I have here, is important. Yeah.
And you've got the obviously the love that you've got for your children, and I think I see it for my children, but I see it for even other children that come into the home. I think it's I love the fact that I get to input into their lives, and then obviously you've got the love of God that you think, if I love my kids this much, how much more motivated is God to help me when he loves my children even more than we do, and he wants to help us in that. So I think I just keep leaning in him, and he will rush to us to help us.
Can I ask what just on this thing of training the heart then? Because when we talk about raising our children to follow God and instructing them in the ways of God, I can so imagine hundreds of parents all around the church thinking, I think what you're telling me to do is get my kids to behave better. To dress well when they come to church, or whatever, just a whole list of rules that we might have these are the things that they will do, these are the things that they must do to be good Christian kids. Mm. And yet that's not quite what you're getting at when you talk about training the heart. What's the difference? What's the point you're making when you talk about training the heart?
I guess I'm thinking that instead of just pointing to the outward things, that it's actually when I'm addressing things, I'm talking about their motives, who they're dependent on, especially when they're younger, that me and you, we're flawed, that we're sinners, that we get it wrong. So even for, I mean, it's every, I can think of even just something last night where you're in the dark and I'm with one of my young girls and it's that they're scared, but you're training the heart and do not need to be afraid. Mm. Because even when I'm popping out, even when daddy's not in or anything, that your maker, your creator is going to draw near. He's there. So it's instead of just shush, stop panicking, stop freaking out. Mm. It's kind of addressing what's going on in the heart and trying to win that. And again, even in as they're getting maybe a bit older, if there's selfishness, it's just addressing. Okay, you would like that object, that you would like that, I don't know, electronic thing, but it's being grateful for what you do have and who gave you that, and being, seeing how God would view things really, rather than just the pressures that can get pushed on you from other people.
So learning that when we're talking to our children about decisions that they're making and habits that they're forming and attitudes that they're kind of cultivating, that we're dealing with a heart that is designed for worship.
Yeah.
There's an instinct in every child's heart to be devoted to something out of desire and longing and love.
Yeah.
That is there in children from the moment they're born. There's this instinctive longing for satisfaction, there's a craving to have a God, if you like. And as kids grow up, you start to see very quickly what kind of gods they've attached themselves to, quite frankly. You can see sort of the idols that dominate their minds. It's, I must have this, and the things they want to talk to you about 24/7, you know, they'll not even notice how ridiculous it is, how obsessive they'll be about this. I want this, and this has become important to me. And that's kind of amusing in the early stages, but as time goes on, you realize these are the things that the wants and the cravings and the desires need to be trained and not crushed. Not that we're saying that it's wrong for you to want, it's wrong for you to desire, it's wrong for you to thirst and hunger after things, but you need to know that those things you desire won't bring you the ultimate joy. There is someone who will. There is someone who will. And in addressing the kind of sins, the outbursts of selfishness of all kinds, whatever they are, whether it's fighting between the kids or just sheer outbursts of disobedience or rebellion against us as parents, when talking it through, when sitting it down, and even having to apply discipline and dealing with things in a clear way, to do that in a context where you're saying, look, the key thing is that your heart needs to know how the goodness of God, and that He's good and He's enough, and you don't believe that, do you? And that's why you fell into this. That's why you made this mistake, because you didn't quite see that your Father in heaven is so good. And I think if children can learn that, and in reality we all have to spend our lives learning that, but we can give them a head start in a way that can set them free. That my experience and my observation would be, children from Christian homes can end up being very legalistic. Mm. And it's not because parents want to raise legalists. No parents think, well, I'm going to raise a Pharisee. I can't wait to bring up a really moralistic, religious, critical, spiteful person who looks down on other people. No one wants that kind of child. but we can, without meaning to, create an environment which is mainly about outward behavior, external behavior. But the kid isn't really learning to see God's goodness and loveliness and enoughness for them.
I think our life goes at such a pace that we forget to stop and explain and encourage.
Yeah.
And I think you can end up just kind of herding your children around, rushing them to the next club, making big decisions on education and things like that. And it can just... you want to just achieve, perform, fit in, conform, without slowing down and thinking about these things.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I think even a great conversation I had with my son was just about the things that he was going to choose for his subjects for later on at secondary school. Mm. And it was just, my heart was glad when I heard him talking about words that he'd heard, prophetic words that he'd received that were informing his decisions of thinking, this is what God said over my life. And so I think these subjects, if I focus on them, not just because of it is often what he enjoys, but it's not just that, it's actually him thinking, what does God want for my life?
Yes.
And watching the fruit of some of our labours of where his heart has changed, and it's such a joy, and it's sometimes tough, isn't it? But
it's inspiring, isn't it? You think, God, if we can see children grow up with a sense of destiny, destiny, God's destiny on their life. It always reminds me of that verse in Psalm 127 that like arrows in the hands of a warrior, are children. It's like this is a son or a daughter is an arrow in the hands of a warrior. Mm-hmm. This isn't I happen to have a child and I must raise this child because that's what a good citizen does. This is somebody who can be useful to God, who can do damage to wickedness and evil and bring about good things. And how can I train them up for the optimum impact? Mm. It's worth saying that in reality, the best work we probably end up doing is our praying. Mm. I love that quote from Paul Miller's book, A Praying Life, where he says, I do my best parenting on my knees in prayer. Mm. And that's certainly my experience for my parents. I know their prayer for us as kids was hugely important. Mm. And we can never pray too much, I guess, for our children. And actually, much of our lecturing and our trying to deal with their behaviour issues and rebuking and so on, that, you know, in God's grace, that can be useful. But in reality, our praying will cause far more impact in the eternal sense. And so to keep encouraging prayer, great communication, great modelling of things, being deliberate about these things, carving time out and setting it in the diary. Can I just make a couple more points before we finish, and we'll see what we can sort of fill out from them. This part, this passage from Isaiah, is so encouraging when it comes to hope and dealing with hopelessness and fear. It's also encouraging when dealing with shame. I think that Mother's Day is a good moment to just deal with shame and put it to one side. The reality is that every family is a context for failure. Let's be honest about that. Every family is filled with failure. Every family is filled with places where we are not going to cut it as well as we would like to in many ways. We're never going to be the same family as another family that we look up to. We're going to have all kinds of weaknesses and frailties that we bring to the table. And all kinds of reasons, therefore, to be discouraged and to feel filled with shame. And that shame can be actually debilitating. I think on Mother's Day, I've noticed how often on Mother's Day, it's actually quite a painful, emotional day for some, for all kinds of reasons, but for some simply because there's a sense of, I'm not cutting it, I'm not doing so well, you know, I'm not as good a mother as she must be, or that one must be, or this one must be. And to be free from that sense of shame is going to be so important, because shame robs us from actually doing well. If we drag down by it, we're in trouble. And the Bible's very clear that shame is a real tool for our enemy who loves to accuse us. The Bible calls Satan the accuser of the brothers. That's what his name means, accuser. And so we are going to be constantly under attack from him. Even in a domestic setting, it's easy to get under a terrible burden. I'm so bad. I blew it again. Maybe because I didn't do very well training my child in this area, or I lost my temper, or I haven't really explained this well to them, or I haven't helped them with their homework, or I haven't. The many, many ways that we can be loaded down with shame, we can be tempted to stay in that place. And this passage of the Bible is so important, because it's like God saying, it's like forbidding us to do that. Forget your shame. Don't be afraid. Of course, the only reason he can do that is because somebody has paid the price for our shame. And that's what the previous chapter of Isaiah explains. There's a servant that God's raised up who has taken the place, who has paid the price, who has bruised for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities, pierced and crucified, killed, put to shame, so that we don't have to live in that shame anymore. And to walk away from shame as a mum, as a dad, as anyone, is vital to be able to be fruitful as a Christian and serving God well in whichever place we've been put. It doesn't mean we won't keep making mistakes and needing to learn from them, but to live under a barrier, a burden of shame, won't be fruitful. The way that God deals with our sense of shame can be is surprising. I think it's easy to imagine that we have to sort of gain credibility, we have to work harder at it, we have to be impressive, just so that we have a chance to even start talking to God and asking for forgiveness and asking for help. You know, we try and make ourselves better so that God can make us better. But it doesn't really work like that. You come to Him as you are. You come to Him with all of the weaknesses and the failings. We all have them. I mean, we could look, because we're on a screen and I'm a pastor and Kate's a pastor's wife and we have lots of wonderful children and they're all so perfect and Christian and constantly look very holy, and they carry Bibles with them everywhere they go, and we're just living in the sound of music, and the kids make their own clothes and we just sing songs, and it's really easy to just drift into some totally unrealistic world. We have so much, we blow it, we have so much to learn. Just reality is so important.
We blow it so much.
We do, especially you. You so often. I mean, I have to really help in it. I have to do the work. No, I'm kidding. It's the other way around, very, very, very clearly. But my encouragement to you is to come to God as you are. Come to God with the weakness and the shame. Come to God with it. Come to God with that sense of, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I need help with being a mum. Mm-hmm. Come with that. Bring that to Him. You know, we have a cleaner, a really lovely person who comes around and helps clean the house every couple of weeks, and does a brilliant job. And it's quite funny, the day before, partly because we want to make sure that we serve her well, we respect her, and we don't want to make the house, you know, we tidy the house up before she comes round.
She might be watching this.
Yeah. If you're watching this, just hope you appreciate the work we do. But she comes around on a certain day. The night before, it's like, cleaner's coming tomorrow, let's clean the house. So that you know, at least she can get through the door. You know, she can open the door. That's otherwise we can't even let her in. So we have to tidy the house just for that. But you can do that with God. You can try and clean yourself up and then He can come in and clean you. But it's never like that, really. You come to Him with all your mistakes and weaknesses. Mm. And even with in front of your children, be able to say, look, I need help. Can you pray with me? I sometimes, when I correct my kids, I sometimes say, can we pray together now? Because I need help. We need to pray for each other. I'm still the dad. I'm still in authority. I'm still the one that needs to lead. I'm not abdicating that. But I'm still a sinner as well. And I need God's grace. And we need it together. And wonderfully, He gives grace to the humble. He loves to give grace to those who are poor in spirit and broken. So I just want you to encourage you to live honestly before Him as a parent, and not allow a kind of overly comparing yourself with the parents, overly worried about, are your kids making you look holy? They won't, they never will. And if they do, that will be a dangerous thing. You don't want to take pride in them in that kind of foolish way. You want to enjoy them as God's gift to you and see if you can help raise them to serve Him faithfully and fruitfully. I do have one more thing to say.
Oh, okay.
Do you have anything else to say?
Well, the one thing I would add is just the ongoing friendship and relationship with them. I think it's just when you decide to enjoy your children, to enjoy the relationship, to just love them unconditionally. Mm. I think it's just, I know I enjoy those days more. I know I enjoy God more, and I enjoy them more. And often those days, the training, the disciplining, the discipling can come much more easier when I just think I'm going to enjoy what I'm doing, enjoy my wonderful kids. And so I guess to the mums, it's just enjoy it as much as possible.
Yeah.
Keep asking for help from others, but know that your kids are individually all so different, and so are you, with your strengths and weaknesses and our strengths and weaknesses. But we can so often have vision for everything else, for the church, for your ministry, and we just forget sometimes for the kids. So absolutely, whether you're full-time, part-time, whatever, I'm just saying, just have vision for them and be committed to them.
I think just to encourage you, if you're not a mum, and this is a relevant message to you, because we are a church, we're a community. If you're not a Christian, you're just here as a friend of ours, and you're listening in, and you're enjoying just being part of church today. I want to encourage whoever you are to keep admiring, respecting, encouraging mums. We want to sort of resurrect the image of motherhood and reinstate it and set it up as a good thing. We don't want anyone to see themselves as just a mum. And I want to talk to you as well if you are somebody who's not a mother who would love to be a mother, and that just hasn't been your experience for whatever reason. You've not been able to, you've not married, you've not, perhaps you've tried for children and not been able to have children, to conceive. It's possible that there are various reasons for sorrow on Mother's Day, because this is a blessing that hasn't been given you. There are so many things to be said, and not enough time to say them all, but this part of the Bible again is so wonderfully encouraging, because it speaks to those who think, well, I haven't got any reason to rejoice, I'm fruitless, I'm not going to have children, I can't have children. And yet it says, rejoice, sing, break forth into singing and cry aloud. Because actually it's speaking about spiritual children who are a gift to us. And so many of us, we have no idea how many lives we're touching. So many single ladies in the church, so many people in the church who haven't been able to have kids. In reality, you're having spiritual children.
Yeah.
In a huge way. And the eternal significance of your lives is going to be massive. This isn't just a small hope, this is a big thing that the Bible teaches in all kinds of ways over and over and over again, that especially in the fact that Jesus himself didn't have children. Jesus never married, he didn't have physical children in that sense at all, and yet the church is his offspring in a sense, and this part of the Bible talks a lot about it talks about him being fruitful, that there'll be a multitude of his children that will be born because of what he's done. Jesus, who died lonely without a family in a sense, certainly without his own kids, the truth is he's raised from the dead now to bring forth generations of children. I wonder if in the return of Jesus Christ there'll be all kinds of examples of how this works in a powerful way. I suspect there'll be a lot of people who never had the chance to have their own family who'll be as fulfilled at that moment as any mum or dad, because they'll see how meaningful it was to have spiritual children, and what a big link in God's eyes that was, the big part that you've played in people's lives. So be encouraged, please be encouraged if your story is different, and still aim to be a spiritual father, a spiritual mother, and be ambitious for the people that you're influencing in as many ways as you can. I think we're going to finish there. There's always more to say, this is an important subject, but we wanted to give you an encouragement to have a brilliant day. Honour the mums, take them to dinner, buy them chocolate and other things. Anything else from you?
No, that's it. Over and out, I think.
Brilliant. See you soon.